The Business of Sport on Share Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Business of Sport. My name is Michael Considine and we've got a very busy show for you today. In a moment, I'll be taking another look at esports with Dominic Sacco from the British Esport Association. That's off the back of a report out this week which shows that the economy, the esport economy that is set to be worth £1 billion by 2020. We'll also be looking at how China is using football to increase their soft power capabilities. That's with Tom Roddy from Newsweek. And of course, Alex Clark will have extra time.
The Business of Sport on Share Radio.
The esports economy is expected to be worth £1.5 billion by 2020. That's according to a new report from market researcher Newzoo. Alongside that, they anticipate that we'll have an audience of approximately 600 million people. For more on this and for his thoughts on where esports can go next, I'm joined by Dominic Sacco, Content Director at the British Esports Association. Dominic, thank you for joining us on The Business of Sport today.
Oh, thanks very much. And you're very welcome. It's great to be here.
Now, we've spoken to you before when you initially set up, just after you set up the British Esports Association. Just for our listeners who probably have been caught a little bit blindsided by the rise of esports, just remind our listeners what esports is.
So esports is essentially competitive video gaming. So it's human versus human, whether it's that's 1v1 or team-based, so 3v3 or 5v5. And players usually compete for some kind of monetary prize pool. And there's usually some kind of, spectator. There's usually some kind of spectating involved in it as well, whether that's over Twitch or live.
This is something we touched upon before, but there is quite a large audience viewership for this. And obviously, like I said in the introduction, I said we're going to, by 2020, 600 million people. That's across the world. And these are people, I suppose, viewing it online, but also in person as well.
Yeah, we're reaching incredible numbers now for esports. I know that the E-League Counter-Strike Finals broke records on Twitch a few months ago when it reached more than 1 million cumulative viewers. So there was more than 1 million people watching that at once, which is fantastic. And Intel Extreme Masters the other week, that pulled in, I believe it's around 46 million viewers altogether online. So, you know, these digital savvy 16 to 30 year olds are on Twitch. They're watching matches live. They're attending live as well. And I think those numbers are only going to increase as the Newzoo figures you mentioned suggested. I will say you said the total market's going to hit £1.5 billion. I think it's dollars. So it's around about £1 billion.
Oh, okay.
By 2020.
But still, a staggering figure nonetheless. And were you surprised when you saw these projections come out from Newzoo?
No, not at all. No, I mean, they're estimating that the revenues are going to hit $696 million this year. And last year, I believe it was about $473. So for it to go up that much, it doesn't surprise me one bit. I've been in esports quite a while now, and I've seen that brands are spending more, you know, fans are spending more. Fan engagement is increasing. People are spending more on the games and the in-game items. And I think that's only natural as the demand increases for esports and also the level of awareness rises as well.
And just give us a kind of a contextualization here, I suppose. How do these figures compare to other sports?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's good to put this into context because I looked into this recently, and I believe esports is nowhere near football yet. I'm not sure what the actual figures are in football, but esports is really quite a way behind. There have been some reports that have compared esports to the likes of the NHL and F1 and things like that, but it's a difficult one. At the British Esports Association, we're keen to emphasise that esports is not a sport. We don't recognise it as a sport because it doesn't have that physical aspect to it, but it's still a legitimate activity nonetheless. It's more of a game, much like a bridge or chess. So I don't feel we should be comparing esports to sports too much. I think the media and the general public, maybe people that aren't aware of esports, are always keen to compare it to sports, but and in Britain it falls under the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, and you know, we're working with the government to educate them on how big esports is and the benefits of it.
Mm. I take your point in that regard, but at the same time, your argument isn't really helped when you have the likes of Paris Saint-Germain, who have set up their own, who are a football club notionally, have set up their own esports team. You've also got esport gamers joining the likes of Manchester City and West Ham as well. The world of esport and actual sport, in this case football, are becoming more and more enmeshed together.
They are, yeah. I do feel it's keen to emphasise, for example, the Manchester City's esports player. If you look at their initial release, I'm not aware of many tournaments that guy's taken part in. I do believe that may have changed now that EA have announced a new FIFA Ultimate Team esports tournament, and FIFA have the esports Interactive World Cup with a much higher prize pool this year, so he may be taking part in more. But other than those two, there aren't many esports sort of top level tournaments in FIFA around, and I think a lot of those guys are being brought in to help those football clubs reach a new demographic rather than compete in loads of esports tournaments and to be the best. I'm sure they do want to do that, but there aren't many FIFA esports tournaments at the moment. But it's a very clever way of those clubs getting more fans, increasing their viewership levels online, and sort of pushing their brand out to a new generation that's away from TV and is online.
So let's look at why they're doing that, because what would be the demographics that would usually partake in esports, would usually watch esports?
Yeah, a lot of the analysts mentioned this 16 to 30 demographic, but I know that, well, in Britain anyway, certainly children younger than that are interested in esports now. But this generation, you could say the 16 to 24 are a lot more digital savvy. I mean, I'm in my early 30s, I'm not as savvy as those guys digitally, but it's that 16 to 24 age group that aren't watching TV as much as that 16 to 24 age group maybe did 10, 20 years ago. And, you know, I've been hearing there's been a little bit of a decline in TV viewership for football overall. And yeah, like I was saying, these brands want to hit that demographic. They want to make sure that those people are aware of their brands, aware of their clubs. They're going to matches, they're buying merchandise, you know, paying for tickets. And esports is an absolutely ideal way for those brands and football clubs to meet that demographic, you know, and to get a new audience and new fans and new customers.
If we look at the figures that we mentioned in the introduction, so $1.5 billion, £1 billion, and the audience figures that we mentioned as well, where is the revenue coming from? Where is that being generated? Is it through sponsorship? Is it through advertising? Is it through merchandise sales?
Yeah, so brands are expected to spend about $500 million, and that's broken down into advertising, sponsorship, and media rights. So that brand investment is on the rise, and then also you've got consumer spending, which is on the up as well. The news have said that consumer spending this year on tickets and merchandise will reach $64 million, and $116 million is going to be invested by the game publishers and owners themselves into the esports industry through sort of partnership deals with organisers. For example, you have ESL that actually hosts the Intel Extreme Masters. It's Intel have a deal with ESL for that tournament, and you're going to see more of these publishers investing in their own tournaments. We've seen over the past year, Rocket League, I believe, did a big deal with Twitch, and they're putting more money into their Rocket League esports World Championships, and we're going to see more and more of that as the years go on. More of these publishers are going to invest their time and money into esports, because ultimately esports is a marketing vehicle for their games. It puts their games in the limelight and encourages more customers and players to spend, to buy the games and to buy the in-game items.
You mentioned Intel there, and have the brands that have been associated with esports thus far been more of the tech digital side? Have we seen any more of what might notionally be described as mainstream brands attaching themselves to esports?
Yeah, we've seen a bit of both, really. I think we're always going to have those endemic brands, you know, the MSIs and the AMDs of the world tapping into esports because it makes complete sense. But we're also seeing those non-endemic sponsors come in. I know Gillette have done a lot of activity recently. They sponsored one of the top League of Legends players, ex-Peke, who actually has been like a good poster boy for the industry, for the esports industry in terms of the advertising side. He's done some good brand partnership deals and shown what can be done in that space. He's done partnerships with Red Bull as well. But you are getting more of those non-endemics come in. As esports grows, you know, they can't ignore it. And if they want to hit that certain demographic, 16 to 24, 16 to 30, digital savvy users, they're going to increasingly look at esports as a, you know, as an avenue for them.
All right, Dominic, well, thank you so much for joining us in the Business of Sport today. That's all we've got time for, I'm afraid. But that's Dominic Sacco, Content Director at the British Esports Association. Dominic, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
After the break, I'll be looking at how China is using its newfound love of football to increase its interest around the world.
The Business of Sport on Share Radio.
Welcome back to The Business of Sport. I'm Michael Considine. Now, as if you didn't know, Chinese football is on the up. Spending in the Chinese Super League totaled $450 million last year, surpassing the English Premier League for a second year running. But what is the motivation? Tom Roddy is a sports reporter at Newsweek, and he thinks soft power has a lot to do with it, and he joins me now. Tom, thank you for joining us today in The Business of Sport.
No problem. Nice to be with you, Michael.
Thank you for joining us. Now, it's a long-running story, China upping their ante when it comes to football and football development. But it's really all about, from what you're arguing here, is it's about soft power. Can you just outline more for us in that regard?
First of all, just for any of your listeners who don't know, I mean, soft power is a persuasive use of international relations using economic influence. And if we look at how China's been doing this, we've got the African Cup of Nations as an example, which is a biennial competition in Africa. And China's used a form of stadium diplomacy across. We've seen this down across the east coast of Africa. So take, for example, Ghana in 2008. China funded two of the four stadiums that were used for the African Cup of Nations in that year. 2 years later in Angola, all four stadiums were built by Chinese. And we're talking around $500 million being spent on that one competition. And then even up to the current date in Gabon this year, the competition that was held in January, two of the four stadiums were built by the Chinese and the other two were built using soft loans from China. And the reason where we talk about this soft power, if we go back and look at Angola in 2010, the following year in 2011, China became the biggest export for Angolan oil. And then this year, for Gabon, before the tournament, we had the Chinese Premier President Xi Jinping. He went out to Gabon and he had a meeting with the president, Ali Bongo Ondimba. And in that meeting, they had their trading partner status and it advanced to become a special status. And China now will provide financial support to a lot of Gabon's infrastructure. So that's a big way that China's used this soft power across Africa. And we're even seeing it a little bit in English football. I mean, the Premier League in England, at least two of the clubs, Manchester City and West Bromwich Albion, have Chinese investment. And we've seen reports even this week of a bid in for Southampton, for a Chinese company to take over at Southampton, and interest in Liverpool as well. And talking about Manchester City, when that deal was done in 2016, when the club was bought, President Xi went over and spent some time with club, was shown around by the club, which is owned by an Abu Dhabi group. And recently, Abu Dhabi has issued oil and gas exploration rights to China. This means that China will have more of an influence on the price of these resources.
It is fascinating. And you make the excellent point with regards to soft power, and particularly with Africa as well. Because if we go back to when the anti was upped with football in China, It was initially actually a slew of African players, predominantly that were signed by Chinese clubs. Didier Drogba springs to mind, and he was the headline signing amongst a host of other ones as well. Demba Ba, another for example. So it's quite interesting to see. It's not, I suppose, something that you can, that is tangible, but when you look around, you can see all of these different links between companies and corporations in the different countries and continents.
Absolutely, and as you say, I mean, Didier Drogba, he went out, he was probably the biggest name. I think we're talking around 2012, that was, and he was without a doubt the biggest name to go out to China, sort of kicked off this this spell, which has taken a while to progress, and really in the last 2 years has just taken off and skyrocketed.
And this is all part of President Xi Jinping's master plan, which has been much talked about. But one thing I've never really seen discussed has been his motivation, the ambition for this plan. Have we really seen anything that could lead us to say why he's launched this?
There are kind of conflicting ideas. If we actually, just to outline what the master plan entails, it came around, it was planned in 2015, was published in April 2016, and it was put together through a few organisations. So the Chinese Football Association, the Ministry of Education, the Sports Bureau, and they've split it into three periods. So they've got a short, medium and long-term objectives that they want to achieve. And the long-term objective is to become, quote-unquote, a football superpower. And that's President Xi's dream. What is the ambition behind it, you ask? There are kind of conflicting ideas of why Xi is so interested in doing this. Some people say they don't really care too much about, you know, winning the World Cup, becoming the best team in the world. It's a social release. Educators in China see sport as a distraction, and Xi wants to make football an entertainment. It's like going to a concert or something like that, or the theatre.
And it also leads into Xi Jinping's plan, I suppose, to have China as a consumer-led economy. Football, as we've seen here in the UK, and like you just said, entertainment is a commodity that can be consumed by a vast array of people.
Absolutely, and there is so much money in that. So it's definitely a possibility that is one of the reasons that's behind it. Another one is that this is kind of a personal thing for Xi, because he is seen as a big football fan. That's the way he's presented anyway. He's known to be a Manchester United fan. There's images of him kicking footballs. There's images of photos where he's been visiting football clubs. Whenever he tends to go to a country, like I mentioned earlier, when he visited the UK and met with David Cameron, he went and visited Manchester City Football Club. And there's that famous selfie of him with Sergio Aguero and David Cameron. He's been to clubs like Bayer Leverkusen in Germany. He's visited Los Angeles Galaxy in the MLS in the United States. So there's kind of this personal thing that it's his, not a toy, but something that he personally wants to achieve because he's such a fan of the sport. And then, of course, the third idea is what we were discussing earlier, that it is this soft power. That's the reason he wants to really make football a success in China.
Now, I must throw my hand up here as an Irish person and say that the image that's most widely used of President Xi Jinping kicking a football is actually a Gaelic football. It's in Ireland, it's in Dublin, it's in Croke Park Stadium. And it always tickles me that whenever we see articles such as these or any coverage on this, it's always that one image that's been used, which I always think is hilarious. But aside from my little personal aside, so we can probably rule this out as a fad. Given that he's so emotionally involved in this, we can probably rule out that this is a fad and therefore Chinese companies, Chinese clubs won't get bored.
They can't get bored is the truth of it, because there's this commitment. There's this public commitment now through the master plan. They have said by 2050, they want to become this football superpower. They have set their goals of what they want to achieve. And of course, in East Asian culture, it is certainly not a good thing to lose face. So they can't get bored. There is, of course, this possibility that the person driving this is President Xi, and he's up for election next year. He is seen as the strongest leader that China's ever had. So he's expected to win re-election, and then his second term would run until 2022. Xi by 2022 will be 68 years of old. And in China, there's this kind of unwritten rule that those 60 years or older should retire. But there's this belief that Xi could defy that rule and carry on. So I think we will see this push on. I mean, the spending, whether the spending can continue, it will be interesting. Talking about getting bored, there's this parallel with what's happening at the moment with 10 years ago in China, something that happened with basketball on the back of the giant Yao Ming, who played in China and then went out to America and played for the Houston Rockets in the NBA. Basketball became very popular in China, and the nation worked really hard to really get it going, but it never truly kicked off. The difference, I suppose, between basketball and football is that football's a real global sport, so they may be more successful with this.
And just to finish up on the players that we've seen land over to China in the last while, I suppose Hulk and Oscar are probably the most well-known of the most recent batch. What has been their experiences? Because you're asking a lot for the Chinese football authorities and the Chinese football movement, I suppose, to develop so much in such a short space of time.
Yeah, and I think they're kind of taking the approach to this in two different ways. They're trying to spend a hell of a lot of money on the likes of, as you say, Hulk and Oscar to come over and be these kind of heroes to the players, really draw the interest from young kids. And take it, those two players in particular are at Shanghai SIPG, a club that was bought in 2015 by the Shanghai International Port Group. And it's actually interesting to look at the spending on foreign players that we've seen there. In 2015, the year that SIPG bought the club, there was about £5.95 million spent on foreign players. The next year it went up to £23.38 million, and then this past year has seen it absolutely blow up to £113.38 million. So that's the one side where there's so much spending to get these heroes in and get the interest. And then on the other side, to actually improve the sport, they're investing in school programs across the country where people, the Ministry of Education has hired people to go into the schools and teach these kids how to play, get them interested.
Okay, Tom, well, thank you so much for joining us here in the Business of Sport. That's Tom Roddy, sport reporter at Newsweek. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Time now to get a roundup of the week's sports business news.
We're headed for extra time.
Welcome to Extra Time. I'm Alex Clark. Everton have taken a big step towards building a new stadium. They've agreed a deal to buy a site at Bramley Moor Dock for their proposed £300 million home ground. It's likely to be at least 3 months before they'll be able to secure the finance for the stadium and prepare the planning application. The Merseysiders have been at Goodison Park for 125 years. German football legend Franz Beckenbauer says he's been questioned by Swiss prosecutors in connection with alleged corruption relating to the 2006 World Cup. He's being investigated along with three other members of the tournament's organising committee. Beckenbauer denies any wrongdoing. Tottenham are closer to playing at Wembley next season after Brent Council voted in favour of them hosting matches there at full capacity. They have until the end of the month to decide if they want to spend the 2017-18 campaign at the National Stadium. It would depend on when they believe construction of their new ground at White Hart Lane would be completed. Sport England have provided £27 million in new funding to encourage more participation at grassroots level. Rugby League has been given £10.7 million in additional funds, while swimming gets another £10.5 million. Badminton received £2.8 million. The head of European football wants to stop top clubs from hoarding players. UEFA president Alexander Šeferin says he's looking at changing rules to punish teams with a luxury tax. At the start of this season, Premier League leaders Chelsea had more than 30 players out on loan. Italian champions Juventus have over 50 players away from their club at the moment. Formula One management has announced the launch of F1 Experiences, a new official ticket and travel package program ahead of this weekend's season-opening race in Australia. F1 Experiences will offer fans the chance to purchase all-in-one race travel packages, along with other unique experiences. And finally, a former owner of Walt Disney is in talks to buy League Two club Portsmouth. An approach by American billionaire Michael Eisner has been confirmed by the South Coast side. They are currently owned by a supporters' trust, making it one of the few clubs in the country run by its fans. That's all from Extra Time. Back to Michael.
Alex Clark with Extra Time, and that's all we have time for on this week's show. Don't forget, you can catch up on this week's show or any of our previous shows on the Share Radio website. That's www.shareradio.co.uk. But for now, my thanks to all of our guests. My name is Michael Considine. I'll see you next week.
The Business of Sport on Share Radio.